This episode is recorded on the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and we'd like to give our respect to their elders past and present. Love Without Limits is a podcast about intimacy and, yes, sex. Just a heads up, we'll be talking openly about topics that might not be for everyone.
I'm Madeline Stewart.
I'm Alistair Baldwin. And you're listening to Love Without Limits, the podcast where we explore the real, raw, often taboo stories of disabled people as they navigate sex, love, everything in between.
And today we're focusing on sex and disability in TV and film. Mm. And look, for too long, TV and film have treated disabled people as either innocent, asexual angels or tragic figures destined to live without intimacy.
Authentic, nuanced portrayals of disabled folks just exploring desire, pleasure, and messy, real relationships are so few and far between. It's really upsetting.
Look, the first time I saw someone like me on screen was Luke Skywalker, right. Classic. Not actually disabled, but yeah, he did also kiss his sister, which is, I don't think, the sexiest representation for me personally.
It's not the best rep for people with one hand.
Yeah, we all kiss our siblings. Fact.
Fact. Well, the first sex scene that I remember seeing with a disabled person was in this movie, The Bone Collector, where Denzel Washington is like playing this quadriplegic criminologist and Angelina Jolie is like a plucky young beat cop with a camera to be his like feet on the ground solving crimes. And then they hook up and it's like incredibly sensual but incredibly inauthentic casting. Oh, it's not the best rep ever.
Yeah.
Also, he's her boss, so call HR.
Definitely. But look, now things, thank goodness, are getting much better.
Much better.
You know, we've got Heartbreak High, we've got Sex Education. Oh. Look, there's progress and people are loving it, which leads perfectly into our first guest, who is my personal girl crush. Alistair, introduce our first guest.
Let me read off my research.
Oh, no.
Because I know next to nothing about you.
Absolutely nothing.
We don't go way back. Hannah Divney is an Australian actress, activist and author.
So they tell me.
Plays Nora in the 2024 black comedy Audrey. And, of course, were nominated for an Actor Award for Best Supporting Actress.
No biggie.
And no, you were the lead.
That was a big deal.
It was a huge deal. You were the lead in the Actor Award winning SBS dramedy Latecomers.
Directed by?
Well, I directed an episode, so
yes.
Look, full disclosure, we're friends.
We
Sorry
are.
About it. I'm going to be asking softball questions.
You can you can watch some of our friendship develop on SBS On Demand in the course of the narrative of Latecomers.
I'm never on screen, but you can really feel my presence.
You can, absolutely.
Hannah, first of all, we would love to say iconic.
Aww,
we love you. We love you so much.
Love
we love
you
your work.
Too.
So you were part of the first Australian sex scene featuring a disabled actor. What did that moment feel like? And like both professionally as an actor, but also kind of personally as Hannah. Like, how did you feel doing that?
It was a huge deal. Like, especially knowing that our community hasn't seen that representation before. We were all really, really committed to getting it right. It was really important to me that we make people watch, as weird as that sounds. We didn't just imply that these two characters were having sex. We didn't just focus on it for a second and then cut away. We actually had this beautiful, pretty intense moment. And actually, it's funny because what we shot is potentially more intense than
what made the cut.
What made the cut?
Well, you know.
But we
couldn't go full R-rated.
We tried out a couple different things. But I was also really lucky to have a co-star like Patrick Janoor, who had really interesting experience as a carer of disabled children in his day job. So he kind of knew, he especially worked with a little boy with cerebral palsy. So he knew like how to help me move my body and be comfortable in that way, which was also really helpful because, I mean, as you guys know, the less explaining you have to do about how to do things, the less like labor and weight it is on your brain, and that there was enough going on at that particular moment.
Yes.
Especially because you have, like, your intimacy coordinator who was incredible, but basically they're standing beside the camera, like, yelling out the choreography that you've mapped out with all your consent exercises and stuff like that. And you're trying to remember that, do it right, and also look like you imagine a character would look like. You can't look like you're concentrating on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weirdly, like... You're just kind of, it's like doing fight choreography or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you have a conversation with your family, maybe being like, oh, just so you know, in this episode, maybe don't watch that one?
Well, it was funny because my mom actually was there on the day. She wasn't in the room, but we filmed up in Newcastle, up at Merriweather Baths, and I needed a carer. Yeah. So my mum came to Newcastle. She sat in the car while we did what we needed to do and then came down and joined us. But, yeah, they were all very aware that, like, this is what I'm doing. And interestingly enough, like, obviously my family was super supportive and came to the premiere, so they're watching it at the same time as I'm watching it for the first time. And they were sitting behind me, so, like, their eyeballs were, like, lasers in the dark.
Can just feel them.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting there like, please be okay with this. But I think both of my parents are pretty practical people. Like, they're like, you're an adult. You're making decisions for yourself. This representation is important. You've always wanted it. Like, and it's also much bigger than you. Not to mention, like, it was done perfectly safely. Like, everyone was taken care of. No one was taken advantage of in any way. Mm.
What do you think are some of the surprising or maybe unknown aspects to filming intimate scenes in terms of just accessibility and stuff like that? Talking about blocks and blocking and...
So I don't know if you were in the room on the day. I can't remember if you were there or not. So PJ's character Elliot is meant to carry my character Sarah in, and she's supposed to sit on... this, like, bench thing. And I remember them wanting to sit me on the bench and me being like, I can't sit on that if you don't give me something to lean against.
Mm.
Like, otherwise I'm going to be, like, just splayed out like a starfish.
Which is how I like to do it.
yeah. But it was also really important, like, emotional beat of the scene that PJ's character had to be the one to lie me down. So we had to start in sitting. So they had to build me, like, a little thing to lean against made of, like, kickboards and masking tape and stuff, because that was what was in the lifeguard's office, obviously.
The sexy, dusty lifeguard's office.
Yes. Oh, so you won't see it in the show, but when I'm sitting on the bench, there is actually something behind me keeping me propped up. And then there were other things, like, obviously when I'm lying down, it's making sure that, like, I'm actually lying flat and I'm, like, on the thing. I'm not gonna accidentally fall off. Like, and also, like, PJ getting onto the thing that we were filming on, it isn't gonna disrupt things. And then there's things like, well, how far can you stretch, like, certain muscles? Like, what's comfortable? If we're showing these two characters having sex, like, where are you putting your legs so that you're not, like, dying in between takes?
Well, I think that's, like, a very true thing where every disabled person is different when it comes to their access needs. And I think abled people probably have conceptions of, like, well, you must be an expert in sitting, where it's like, okay, but you are buckled in and you've got a backrest.
And I have these laterals that hold in my sad. Like, I remember when I was filming Audrey, the movie that I did, they had a scene where they had me sitting on a bed and I was just sitting on the bed and I went, yeah, I can't do that. And they had to basically build, like, this thing with pillows. And the DOP, the director of photography, was like, you keep move it. And I'm like, yes, because I keep sliding down there because I can't. And, but I remember.
Is there something wrong with you? You keep moving.
But I remember the director was so, and she was so sweet about it, but she was so confused when I was like, I can't sit. And she was like, what do you mean you can't sit? You sit all of the time. And I was like, oh, no, I know, but. I can't sit by myself.
Yeah. Not the way you need me to sit for the shot. Yeah, that
for the shot that you want. It's not working.
Yeah.
Because this scene was so big and so important, and in fact, a lot of your work on screen is very important, very big for advocacy. Has anyone reached out to you to let you know how it's impacted their lives or how you've helped them?
Yeah.
Does anyone stick in your mind?
I've had some really beautiful messages kind of from across the spectrum. I mean, I get a lot of messages from parents who will say, I'm so glad that my kid who is like only little and is kind of growing up and growing into being disabled will have you to look up to. And I'm so glad that when it comes to conversations around like sex and intimacy, like I'll be able to show them. Like, I'm obviously not showing your 5-year-old.
No.
MA 15 plus, I want to say.
Maybe even R. But then I've also had some people say, like much older people say, like, oh, we cried watching that because it's the first time we've seen ourselves represented, or it's the first time we've been able to say to someone else in our life, you know, that feeling that that character was talking about or that thing that that character went through, that's what it's like.
Yeah.
Mm. And like, finally having a frame of reference for people to be like, oh.
I think that's what people crave. Yeah, the reference to be like, oh, it's like that. And sometimes when you watch things, you're like, oh, that's what I feel. I'm so glad they've said that because you've cracked the code.
But, I mean, you talk about feeling a little unprepared, but the fact that it was the first, like, Australian drama sex scene featuring someone with a visible disability, everyone was new to this because we were breaking ground in a way where, like, I don't think we could have found anyone who wouldn't have been sort of doing something they'd never done, because it's something the industry really never does.
I haven't had a lot of experience in, or really any experience in dating and that sort of stuff. So doing all of that for the first time on camera, playing pretend when it obviously wasn't real. I mean, in the sense that, like, we weren't doing the things that we were doing on camera.
Screen Australia would never sign off on
that. No, that might be pushing the envelope a little too far. Yeah.
But there was real intimacy touch.
There is, of course, real intimacy and touch, but it is very weird to be like, cut, oh, wait, like, that scene's over.
Mm.
And when teenagers are figuring out stuff about intimacy or navigating firsts with each other, that wasn't happening for me. And it didn't feel like it was going to. So that was a box that I would have liked to open, but had kept pretty far in the back of the brain just for my own survival, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think as well, it's a really interesting stereotype that we have where when people would be talking about their future partners as teenagers or like trying to spitball, like what would someone's future partner look like? People would always just automatically assign me another disabled person.
Yeah. Mm.
Which I found really interesting but also confusing, because I was like, well, hang on a minute, why do they have to be disabled? Mm. And when people would kind of try and answer that, you know, there'd been kind of a lack of eye contact, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And they'd be like, well, it'd be easier. And I'm like, easier for?
For who?
Yeah.
Easier for me? Easier for them?
No.
Or easier for the invisible able-bodied person in this scenario who then doesn't have to adjust their life to either one of us.
Yeah. It's very revealing that they're coming from a place of like, well, I wouldn't want to do it, so let's just keep it segregated. But it's like, easier. Who's going to you know, reach the tin tomatoes at the top of the show. You need a tall in any relationship.
Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't count it out. I mean, I'm never going to say never, but for me, the idea of having a disabled partner doesn't work for very simple reasons like reaching the tin tomatoes or teaching a kid to play soccer or tying shoes or the physical intimacy side of things would be complicated before you even get to like the R-rated stuff. It's just,
yeah.
How do you do that?
I know.
So for me,
and I'm gay, so it would just never work with us, unfortunately.
Star-crossed lovers,
we're incredible platonic friends.
We are.
Well, speaking of those kind of stereotypes, I'm keen to hear about any of the representation that you were sort of seeing before you were creating it yourself.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think of the media representation of disabled people and specifically their sexuality and their love life?
There wasn't any, yeah. Really. And I don't just mean that, like, here in Australia. I mean across the board. I think the first time I saw a disabled character on screen that I can really remember was probably Artie Abrams from Glee.
Mm.
And I remember being so excited as, like, an 11-year-old kid because I was like, oh, this guy dances, he sings, he's got friends, he's got, like, romance happening, like, and he's in a wheelchair, like, this is amazing. And then I think it's, like, season two maybe.
Oh. This has burned into my mind.
It's
to safety, yes. Dance.
There's a dream sequence to safety. I'd forgotten that it was specifically to safety dance, but that somehow makes it so much worse.
It's worse. I love that song, but it's forever tainted.
And obviously, like, he gets out of his wheelchair and starts to dance, and I remember just, like, my stomach dropping and being like, oh.
This actor isn't disabled too.
Cool. So he's wearing my identity like a costume. And then I started becoming more aware of the fact that that is the norm in Hollywood and in representation. I mean, there's actually a name for it. It's called cripping up, which is the idea that an able-bodied actor is making something of a shortcut to success for themselves because they play a character with a disability, and that requires a level of physical, emotional, psychological transformation that often wins them Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Like, the ratio of people who have won Academy Awards for playing disabled characters but been able-bodied compared to the three people throughout history.
Hannah, thanks for coming on the show. Everyone, watch Audrey, watch Latecomers, yeah. And
cast me in, yeah, the things.
Yeah.
Cast follow Hannah. The Hannah Divany train. Let's follow on Instagram and
get in early, yeah, like I did.
Yeah. So our next guest is Nathan Borg. He is one of Australia's most recognisable deaf actors on our screens. Nathan has worked in many short films and commercials and has also starred in Neighbours, which totally makes sense because he's so classically good looking. And because it's a podcast, we have to tell you that. You just need to know that. He's very handsome.
Throughout this interview, our guest Nathan Borg will be interpreted by Auslan interpreter Dan Hatley.
Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be here.
Now, Nathan, you made Neighbours history by being the first actor with a cochlear implant, but in general, Australia's TV representation for deaf people is very lacking. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think in Australia, we're still quite slow in representing diversity. We all know that. I think it's also interesting because with Neighbours, I had to make contact with them to make something actually happen. I felt as though from what I'd already seen on TV, people in production hadn't yet thought about that representation. In terms of disability actors, we sometimes have to make that effort to enable it to happen in the first place.
I actually heard you weren't the first deaf character on Neighbours. They had a deaf character before you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. There was a person using Auslan in one scene. Then over time, we just didn't see it again. And then I think production changed over time, and it was interesting because finally Neighbours did have a bit more diversity happening. But I do remember actually when I made contact with them, I said, look, why is there no disabled actors on screen? And they said generally to me, you know, everyone's welcome. But I'm thinking, where's the disability representation that we see in other TV series? I mean, there's some, but I guess there isn't enough in terms of representing the general community. It was just a really interesting process when I had that conversation with them.
Now, obviously, being on Neighbours has made you incredibly high profile. You're a great get for this show. And, of course, you've also recently appeared in an underwear campaign. Very hot.
Very hot. Know.
I think we were both talking
Thank
earlier.
Thank you.
And what is that like, I guess, has that affected dating and sex for you being, I guess, a celebrity who certainly in terms of the underwear campaign has bared a lot of flesh?
Well, I think it was interesting actually because I didn't feel sexy. I was still like learning how to be sexy and how I can feel good about myself. And I think as well, like, I think with work, being disabled, being deaf and feeling sexy, you know, I felt like I was still learning in terms of that confidence. So when the first commercial came out for the underwear and me signing in this ad, it was really good because I sort of started to feel like, yeah, everyone on set was like, come on, Nathan, you know, giving me all these compliments. I did feel sexy over time. And I was a bit nervous, of course, because when it was released, the deaf community were finally seeing me in my underwear, you know, my community seeing me in that way. But I think over time what was interesting for me was like dating and, you know, online presence, people saying, wow, I've seen you in your underwear. And I remember one time, actually quite funny, I was on Smith Street. You know, of course, it's a well-known area for our queer community. And one guy yelled out at the top of his lungs. He's like, oh, look, there's the Bonds guy. How sexy is he? And I was so embarrassed. I completely blushed and I didn't know what to do. I was like, hi.
That's fabulous. Do you think there is something about the lack of representation of sexy deaf characters, which is maybe...
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why I felt like I wasn't sexy enough. And I think specifically, really, in the gay community as well, I felt like I wasn't sexy enough for the gay community. And I think for myself, I was feeling like because I'm deaf and also I'm gay, and when you're at gay events in the community, you often think that about yourself, am I enough, you know? But over time, I realized that I needed to stop that thinking and just be and just enjoy myself and know that I am sexy enough. But, yeah, I think one thing that was great about the Bonds work was that it actually did help me recognise and realise, looking at myself, yeah, I do feel sexy.
Speaking more about Neighbours and about deaf characters being presented, you know, Neighbours has a lot of themes of love and lust in their show. Like, is this a conversation? Like, how do you feel about being that representation? And did you have conversations with them about, like, how it was represented and things like that?
Yeah, well, we had conversations actually about deaf stories, but also about non-deaf stories, just showing that people with a disability, whether you're deaf or whatever you might have, that we're just humans. We have drama, we have love, we have interesting lives. There was one story that was a gay romance narrative, and that was really interesting because I was like, finally they're showing love with my character. And it was really interesting because, of course, the other actor wasn't deaf, they were hearing. So it was interesting to see, like, okay, we've got a person with a disability, a person with a non-disability, a non-disabled character, how they come together and how they, you know, experience love. And I think that story got released during Pride Month, actually, and that was really nice. And I should say, the sad thing is, though, that they broke up because one of them decided to be with a woman. So I was like, oh, my God, are you serious? Why would you do that? God.
That is such a Neighbours storyline, if ever I
exactly.
heard one.
Exactly, I know, I know.
And, well, I mean, RIP, Neighbours is at an end, although I feel like it's ended about 10 times, so you never know. But I think looking forward, there still seems to be a lot of hesitation about bringing deaf stories to Australian screens and bringing authentically deaf actors into those roles. Where do you think that hesitation or even fear is coming from like the abled hearing people in charge?
Look, I think it's interesting because I'm sort of still learning too about what's been happening. For example, in the past, there'd be like the casting director saying, yeah, okay, your time will come, like disabled, queer actors, you know, your time will come kind of thing, and it'll happen. It's just about time. And then now I'm feeling like, hang on, that's been told to me like over multiple occasions, like over the past 3 years, and I feel like, well, if you add you know, like the cricket sound, it's sort of like, hello, I'm still waiting. What do you actually mean time will come? Like, when is that? Is it in 50 years? Or like, what do you actually mean by that? I think that's interesting seeing that play out. There's been sort of no real action. Like, where are the actors? Where are these narratives and stories appearing on our screens? And like Heartbreak High, say, for example, or Invisible Boys or Bump even, like we see diversity being represented, which is great. But sometimes I see that and I think, well, where's the deaf actors? Where are the deaf actors representing that lust and sexiness, right?
Do you think that deaf culture brings like a different kind of richness and perspective to intimacy and connection, like things that mainstream folk maybe just don't even think about?
Absolutely. I think deaf people are better than hearing people in bed. So, okay, first fact. I heard that. And, well, I think it's funny because, like, with myself, I'm always been with hearing men, and that's interesting because I sort of got to share my access needs in a way. Like, I can communicate in the dark, but it's difficult for me to understand what's happening, and it can be awkward because the man he touches my ear and then my cochlear implant falls off and they're like, oh, what's that? I'm like, oh, it's my cochlear implant. You know, just chill. You can see automatically they're like, what the hell's going on? So I've got to like reassure them, and then at that moment they realise I'm deaf. And it can be interesting because in the past I've been with deaf people, and when the lights are out, obviously I can't see the communications. I can't see their hands. I can't see what they're saying to me. I'm like, oh, what do you want? You know, what do I want, right? So it's a completely different process, which is interesting, whereas when I'm with a hearing person, there can be some level of communication. But intimacy, I think, is really important for deaf people because we really like to maintain eye contact, of course, when we're communicating, whether it's lip reading or sign language. So it's always nice to have some soft light when you're being intimate, which I think brings a nice element, yeah.
Honestly, if you looked me deep in the eyes with soft light, I would fall in love with you. I know I'm not your target audience, but I'd go for it.
Lol. Well, actually, hang on. I think it's funny actually because when I'm with like hearing guys, I can speak in English, but when I'm with a deaf person, it's different. You've got to sort of stop and then use your hands. So you have to stop everything to raise your hands and talk, and then once you're done, you can go back to doing what you're doing. You can't just sort of do it in the moment. You know what I mean?
Right. You're not like – you can't sign – within someone and just hope that they can feel it from the outside in.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You got it.
There's no Auslan fisting intersection that we're talking about today, but...
Well, actually, I should say... one time I was on Grindr and there was a guy going, hey, I've seen in your photos you got a cochlear implant. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, I thought he was going to say something negative, right? And he's like, oh, no, actually, I really want your cochlear implant to be put into my asshole. And I'm like, what? Honestly, I was like, what is going on here? I blocked him instantly from that. I was like, I'm not going to answer that. Like, goodbye.
That goes on your ear. No.
I know, right? And I was just a bit like, okay, if you wanted to give me $10,000 for my cochlear implant, cool, let's do it. But at the same time, I'm like, no thanks.
I'm going to finish up with one important question, and I feel like we might have already gotten there with deaf people are the best in bed. But what is one myth or assumption about people who are deaf and sex?
I think sometimes get a shock if I or a deaf person goes to like a nightclub or goes to a sex party or all these different kinds of events, right? And people were like, oh, hang on. Oh, deaf people actually come to these things? And it's like, of course, you know, we do. I think that's a really interesting myth or assumption. And it's almost like people don't believe that a deaf person would go to something like that until they see it themselves. And they're like, oh, okay, there are people with a disability out there in the community, right?
Well, why do they think you wouldn't go to something like that? Is it like access requirements, or do they think that disabled folk are just so pure of heart and just complete virgins who would never even think about sex, let alone do it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I think it's also interesting because all those kind of events are actually really dark. So it is really hard for me to lip read and communicate. And I think normally what I'll do is ask someone if I can type on my phone and we can communicate in that way. And, yeah, it's just really different. I think it's always a different approach from other people in how they might want to communicate. But, yeah, everyone's reaction is really different.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
Thanks for coming on the show, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for sharing so much with us. We've loved every second of it.
Yeah, cheers. Me too. Love you both.
What an incredible episode we've had, Alistair. These are my favourite guests.
Oh, my God. What was your highlight?
I really love Nathan. Nathan's fantastic. Can't remember a word he said. I was just lost in his eyes the whole time. All I could see was the Bond commercial the whole time.
I mean, very, very compelling ad for underwear, I have
yes,
to say.
Yes, yes. And Nathan was so interesting and I loved hearing everything he was talking about.
And his experience reaching out to neighbours himself, yes, saying there should be representation.
Go out and get what you want.
And talking to Hannah about latecomers. I mean, it was just such a privilege of my career to be part of that. And Hannah speaks so eloquently about the impact of what that show, and in particular that very sexy sex scene, did for the industry. Ugh, what an amazing episode we've had today.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that's been today's episode of Love Without Limits. Thanks for listening.
This has been Love Without Limits, hosted by us, Madeline Stewart and Alistair Baldwin.
And produced by Eliza Hull in partnership with SBS and Attitude Foundation. SBS team is Joel Supple and Max Cosford, recorded at Session in Progress.